Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on the WNYC. Coming up in a little while, will the iPad change the world, or is this going to be the first major Apple product that people go, eh? We'll talk to a couple of guests about that. But now a cautionary tale about how a mental health diagnosis can be used as a political weapon. African-American men are diagnosed with schizophrenia 4 to 5 times more than other groups. A disease that used to be associated with white female docility suddenly became one of black male hostility, just as the civil rights protests were heating up in the 1960s. And according to my next guest, that's not a coincidence. Dr. Jonathan Metzl, Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Women's Studies at the director of and Director of the Culture, Health, and Medicine Program at the University of Michigan, has written a book called The Protest Psychosis, How Schizophrenia Became a Black Disease. Dr. Jonathan Metzl, welcome to WNYC.
Hello, it's great to be here.
First, explain the phrase in the title. What is protest psychosis?
Well, protest psychosis actually was a term that appeared in psychiatric literature in the 1960s. It was coined by several New York psychiatrists to describe a new type of patient that they saw coming into psychiatric emergency rooms at the time. These were African-American men who had, for various reasons, either participated in civil rights protests or in race riots. And what the authors argued to, again, New York area psychiatrists, were that these men were demonstrating a new type of schizophrenia. They called it a protest psychosis that was quite literally caused by participating in civil rights protest.
People actually believed that it was caused by participating in civil rights protest. Does anybody believe that today?
Definitely not.
What was the definition of schizophrenia before the 1960s?
Well, prior to the 1960s, there was a close association between what we might think of today as the split mind or the split personality and schizophrenia. So, for example, when the first edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual came out in 1952, schizophrenia was defined in gender-neutral terms as a personality condition that was almost closely aligned with neurosis. And that term was, as you mentioned in the intro, preferentially applied to people who had splits of different kinds of personalities, so not directly associated with violence or hostility.
And in fact, before the 1960s, middle-class white women were the most likely to get the diagnosis, correct?
Well, what people argue is that schizophrenia was a very broad definition at that time. It was very much a catch-all definition. The diagnoses that we think of most commonly with psychiatry today, depression, bipolar disorder, anxiety, these were all very small categories at the time. So schizophrenia really was a very vast diagnosis that was applied to vast numbers of people, including white middle-class women, yes.
And when the second edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders came out in 1968, suddenly there was a new definition of schizophrenia, and it included words like aggression and anger and hostility.
That's true, and particularly in the paranoid subset of schizophrenia. And so what I show is not so much that the authors of the DSM-2 were preferentially trying to say, let's apply this to particular groups of people, but I think there was an unintended consequence of adding the words aggression, hostility, and projected anger that ended up leading to overdiagnosis of schizophrenia in African American men at the time.
How conscious do you think the shift in language was within the medical community?
I do not think it was conscious.
Not a conscious association in terms of race, because the disease became violent at the same moment that it became black, if you will.
Well, at the time that, on one hand, I think that the DSM-2 reflected cultural norms, so there was a lot of discussion about kind of angry, crazy people in society at the time. But I do think that there was an unintended consequence, which was that we see the emergence of two things: overdiagnosis of schizophrenia in African American men in the aftermath of the DSM-2, and also cultural stereotypes of people with schizophrenia as being hostile or aggressive. Stigma emerges at this time as well.
So, listeners, I wonder if anybody's out there today who is an African American person who has experience with schizophrenia, either yourself or a loved one or anyone you know. Do you want to talk about it? And if you think it was in any way political or perceived that way by the medical establishment as you came in contact with it. 212-433-WNYC for Dr. Jonathan Metzl, author of the new book, The Protest Psychosis, How Schizophrenia Became a Black Disease. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So the mental health profession may be careful today to avoid racializing the disease, but I believe African-American men are still diagnosed with this disease at higher rates than other groups, and that that had not been the case before the 1960s. Is that correct?
Well, this overdiagnosis number actually has been in place and relatively unfortunately stable since the 1960s. So the last one of these studies that I know of was done in 2008 and showed an overdiagnosis in minority populations and black men particularly.
And what does overdiagnosis mean? Does that mean that it occurs legitimately at a greater rate than in other populations, or does it mean that it's being overdiagnosed and people are being incorrectly labeled schizophrenic?
Well, that's a great question. That's actually the central problematic of my book, is looking at what exactly is this overdiagnosis issue telling us. And I think that it's complicated because on one hand, schizophrenia is argued in psychiatry to be a genetic illness that occurs in 1% of the world's population, one out of every 100 people, and it shouldn't be disproportionate in any particular racial, gender, socioeconomic group. And yet we have these disparate numbers in diagnosis, and the question of why that is and how that is something that I unpack historically in the book.
None of this is to deny that there's real suffering associated with this disease. You're a professor, but you're also a practicing psychiatrist. You've seen this firsthand, and you write about the hazards associated with underlying socially constructed subtext of doctor-patient interactions. So as someone who treats patients directly, how do you deal with it?
Well, absolutely. I would say that definitely in no way is my telling of this history in any way meant to imply that anyone's suffering is inauthentic. Schizophrenia is a very debilitating illness. Hallucinations, delusions, social withdrawal all cause tremendous pain and suffering. At the same time, I feel like psychiatry has been too resistant to examining the social and political forces that help shape psychiatric diagnosis. And so what I'm trying to do is uncover why a particular stigma against schizophrenia emerged and why that might impact particular groups of persons more than others. And also I try to help at least uncover the origins of what I feel is in some ways a valid mistrust of psychiatry in certain minority populations.
But does understanding all of this socioeconomic subtext influence how you practice when you have a patient?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I would hope that many psychiatrists would, on one hand, take the advances of biological psychiatry, which are very important in understanding the brain, but also help us understand why particular patients might be mistrustful of us.
So how? Take us into your office. What would you do? What would you do differently than you might have before you understood this as well?
Right. So on one hand, you know, I think that there are valid questions that happen when people, you know, as a psychiatrist, sometimes people want to be in my office and sometimes people don't want to be there. They're brought for various reasons. And it's not like I'm going to say, sir, what I think you're suffering from is a socially constructed illness and we need to change psychiatry, society or something like that. But I would say that at least asking people to give voice to what their assumptions are about psychiatry, about psychiatric medications, trying to get at people's issues, I think is very important to the treatment process.
Dylan in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Dylan.
Hi. I had grown up with two family members, a mother and a cousin, who were both initially diagnosed as schizophrenic, later to find out that they were rediagnosed as manic depressive, and their diagnoses have changed over time. And the biggest challenge as a family member with family members with mental illnesses is that these diagnoses come with these treatments that tend to create a bigger problem because of the disconnect between psychiatrists and the community in which they're treating. My family is of Haitian descent and of African-American descent. And we are filled with, of course, certain preassumptions about psychiatry. But I think psychiatry came with a lot of presumptions about our culture, so that when things were expressed to the doctors from their perspective of Haitian American or African American, it just was not regarded as of anything of value, anything to be heard, and I believe that they felt as if they weren't regarded. So hence the trust grew from there.
Dr. Metzl,
fantastic points. Very important points. On one hand, I would say that I think that that is so deeply valid. And I think just if you go by statistics alone, we know that members of minority populations are, as I was saying before, overdiagnosed with schizophrenia and also underdiagnosed with issues such as bipolar disorder or depression. And the question is kind of why that is and what psychiatry can do about it. In the book, I try to lay out, first I tell the history of these imbalances, and then I try to lay out some ideas about new relationships really between psychiatry and minority populations as a way of really hopefully promoting a new conversation about race in psychiatry.
Dylan, thank you. She mentioned being part African-American, part Haitian, and in the conclusion of the book, you reference Dr. Paul Farmer, who happened to be on the show just this week. He's the medical anthropologist and founder of Partners in Health in Haiti. And he talks about structural violence, institutionalized racism, where particular populations are rendered vulnerable to disease because of economic, political, and cultural forces, in addition to biological forces. And this is what you're talking about, that structures like economic policy, zoning laws, healthcare systems keep populations vulnerable under the guise of helping. And so you've added psychiatric diagnosis to that list.
Absolutely. There's been a movement in medical education more broadly to talk about something called cultural competency, which means that we teach doctors and patients to be more culturally aware of each other's racial and ethnic backgrounds. It's very important, but at the same time, I slightly argue against that position in the book and say that the individual interaction takes place in the context of a much bigger cultural interaction. And so if we only teach people to be more culturally sensitive and don't address the structural issues that shape diagnosis, shape healthcare disparities, influence racist practices, that those things are much more important ultimately than whether or not people have a particular kind of communication.
Take two aspirin and come back when we have an egalitarian society.
Well, it's got to be both, I think.
Addison in Beacon, you're on WNYC. Hello, Addison.
Hi, good day. Thank you so much for this topic. Yes, I've had a lot of experience. I was quite a political activist in my day, and I think there's maybe a nexus between the psychotropic drug use in the 60s and 70s, also a lot of young black men with sexual identity crises, combination of racism, social turmoil, self-hatred. And a lot of African-American people seem to see church as therapy and use self-medication and church instead of seeking help. It's mostly seen as weakness. And I've worked with homeless veterans, abused people, people who have been incarcerated and suffered police abuse. So I think there's a huge nexus in a lot of these situations. But we should also take care as we go ahead to not develop a new kind of profiling that involves mental health.
I really could not have said that any better myself. I think that psychiatry really needs to learn from a new engagement in the community in a particular way. In the book, I actually tell the historical stories of several people from the 1960s who ended up in psychiatric asylums near Detroit. And so that really is a central narrative to the book.
Addison, thank you so much. In fact, Melissa Harris Lacewell, the politics and African American studies professor at Harvard, who happened also to be on the show earlier today, just talking about the State of the Union address, praised your book in her review of it in The Nation. She made the connection to current political discourse in cautioning people who refer to the Tea Partiers or the birthers or the Democrats in Congress, for that matter, as crazy, that word. And she says it does more to obscure understanding of our of our real differences in society than to illuminate them. So I wonder what current examples in our public discourse might give you pause, having investigated this context of the history of schizophrenia.
Well, I think particularly in the debate about healthcare, there is an assumption that health and illness are static or stable terms. And one thing I think I've learned from this process is actually that definitely the category of health and also the category of illness have deep political and social histories. They're not just value-free. And so I think that in part the charge around questions of what an illness means to a particular person or community is very historical and very social, not a clear binary of good and bad.
And I think I might have misidentified the school where Melissa Harris-Lacewell teaches. It is Princeton.
It is Princeton.
Not any other unnamed brand X Ivy League university.
I'm sure she'll forgive you.
That may have slipped out of my mouth. Before you go, you have some events while you're in New York around this book, right?
Correct, yes. I'll be speaking at Columbia Medical Center later today and then at NYU tomorrow afternoon, and also speaking on a website tomorrow called Big Think.
And you can get the links to those events if you want to know more about seeing Dr. Jonathan Metzl. You can see that information on our webpage at wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Dr. Jonathan Metzl, Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Women's Studies and Director of the Culture, Health, and Medicine Program at the University of Michigan. His new book is called The Protest Psychosis, How Schizophrenia Became a Black Disease. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll check out the iPad in a minute.